Welcome to the show, everybody. 7-Eleven here on a Monday morning, or should I say bonjour, hi. Welcome to your Monday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer, did you watch SNL on the weekend? Did you?
Nice reference there.
Yeah.
What do they have cooking with the French?
They did a little, one of their first skits was a takeoff on a CBC television morning show, and they called it Bonjour High. It had some promise. I didn't really actually, other than it being Canadian, didn't really find it that funny.
Is that a little Jim Carrey influence? A little Joe Biden action?
I don't know what. It just seemed to come out of the blue. I'm not too sure.
And did you guys also watch Aaron Rodgers' celebration after the first touchdown yesterday? Right?
Was he waiting for people to come? And
No. He did this thing where he crossed his arms, and I thought he was like showing off his abs, which you can't see. And then somebody made a reference to a skit that's been off the air for about 5 years. It was a bit of an obscure reference.
Kringleberry
or something which
like that,
never heard of. But, all these different little things here. Got to figure out what the hell's going on.
Yeah. Anyway, back to on SNL. Yeah, it was...
funniest part of that skit was they kept adding, because they had an English guest.
Yes.
And they kept adding French names. To his name.
Oh, okay.
He was their U.S. correspondent.
Jean-Francois Desjardins.
Yes.
And they just kept adding French names to it.
I do have to say, Jim Carrey does just an amazing Joe Biden. I mean, and he can just see it. If Joe Biden actually does win the ends up winning the election, it's like, okay, I got a 4-year contract on Saturday Night Live.
Well, not only that, for how much Joe naps, he might just celebrate in. I mean, even Bin Laden, everybody needs a double.
Yeah, exactly.
But have you watched the Jim Carrey movie or documentary kind of on his life? The time that he puts into these different characters, he must have dropped a bunch of weight. Did he not play Biden? Like, he's not exactly the healthiest look, but this guy rolls in. Man, oh man, it's just incredible to what he's able to adapt to and try to do. In this case, just nail it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so bonjour, hi, or welcome to the show, or welcome back. 7:13 here on this Monday morning. Hope you had a nice weekend. Tell you what, let's get some winning going right now, or not some winning, but at least award our daily prize from Friday for our TSN 1200 Pizza for a Year contest. So, I have assigned random numbers between 1 and 5, Simmer, to the following 5 people. We have two Jeremys, Jeremy B and a Jeremy P, who qualified, as did Steve, Nate, and Matt. So, got numbers between 1 and 5, randomly assigned to those 5 names. You give me a number and we'll award the daily prize.
I'll go with lucky number 2.
Lucky number 2 is Jeremy B, as in boy. Congratulations, boy. Jeremy, you're a winner. You've got a $100 gift card coming your way from Gabriel Pizza. And all 5 of you are now into the grand prize draw of Pizza for a Year. We've got the contest running for another couple of weeks. So we're getting down to the short strokes. We've already qualified somebody from among our 2 daily qualifiers already this morning. So we'll do one more again between now and 10 o'clock. We'll do it again on In the Box between 10 and 2. And twice on the drive. So there you go. And then we've got a bunch of football for you tonight, as we've got a doubleheader kicking off with the Chiefs and the Bills. We'll join that game probably early in the second quarter at 6 o'clock as it kicks off at 5 on TSN television. And then we'll join the nightcap, which is the Cardinals and the Cowboys. So a pretty good football doubleheader to start your Monday work week. We'll get into more of the World Series coming up as we'll look ahead to the Dodgers and the Rays. L.A. gets there by beating Atlanta last night 4-3 in Game 7. Cody Bellinger with a home run in the 7th inning to a win. I was actually invested in that game, but at 10:45 as they started the 7th inning, 3 hours, and it was the top of the 7th inning.
Mm-hmm.
The total time, by the way, they must have played the last 3 innings fairly quickly, because the total time in that game was 3:37, ended close to midnight.
In between pitches.
I don't want to harp on baseball, okay?
But you can.
Okay, but they have to do, like, people's time is way too important now. Their minds wander way too quickly for a sport to take, I don't care how important it is, mm-hmm. 3.5 to 4 hours to play a game. Nobody's got that time.
No, and what, Patriots yesterday, what do they start, 1 o'clock? I think the game's over by 4, and what is that, with a 20-minute halftime? I don't know what it is, and I don't know, watching with no fans, I don't think it's any different as far as the time of the game. These NFL games, it's like, book it. Hey, here's what I got. Even the National Hockey League guys over the years, Hammer, we work the Saturday nights. Okay, it's 7 o'clock start. That thing is over at 9:43. I mean, lock it down. It used to be 3 hours pushing and shoving, talking to everybody. They've eliminated that. They've created the flow. And I'll be honest, I have not been into the baseball at all. Unless your team is the Blue Jays and the stadium's rocking JR, it just is way too, like, it just, you're like, I'm not as a casual fan going to tune into this. It's just a grind.
Yeah, it's just, it's, and again, these are the most important games of the year. I'm trying as hard as I can, but these are also the games in which you pave your way for your future. You know, you have, and I know it's a tired old cliche to talk about, you know, the kids are your future customers, but they are.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, nobody's letting their kids stay up till 11:45 at night to watch a baseball game.
Well, Hammer forces his kids, yeah. But other families.
No. I was in bed. I couldn't last past the fifth inning. Yeah. It was done.
And you wanted to, right? You wanted to watch the game.
Yeah.
It's game seven.
It was 3-2. Braves were up. Of course I wanted to. But.
Yeah. So anyway, as I said, I shut her off at 10 after 11 last night when they were just starting the seventh inning. So anyway, Dodgers went it to 4-3. So we'll talk more about the baseball coming up and more on the NFL. But we'll circle back to hockey. We talked about what the Sens did on the weekend. We're going to hear from Pierre Dorion, though, in just a second. But I want to touch upon the other signings. Let's start with Cody Ceci. Did you in any way see him ending up with the Pittsburgh Penguins, Simmer? Because he got a one-year deal, $1.25 million, so it's not a big payday. Bit of a pay cut for Cody Ceci, but he ends up on the blue line with the Penguins. What do you think about the fit?
No, good for him. First of all, Todd Reirden, anywhere he's been, has done a real good job. You go back to Schultz and Daly and even Sergei Gonchar coming from here. They've always done a good job. So, hey, first thing, Cody Ceci, get out of Canada. Don't be the focus. You're being paid as a third-pairing defenseman. I think this is a real nice opportunity for him after buying out Jack Johnson, where he'll fit in. A team that still, even getting a little bit older, should possess the puck. So I like the fit on lots of different levels. And I wouldn't say I was surprised by the payday. But hey, go and see what you can do now that you're able to finally clear out of all the negativity that's been between Toronto and Ottawa.
Right. So Matty Grzelcyk re-upped with the Bruins. A four-year contract that will pay him just under $4 million per season. As it sits right now with Torrey Krug moving on, and who knows what's going to be going on with the Zdeno Chara, but for the here and now unsigned, he's the lone holdover on the left side of that Bruins defense.
Yeah, not a very good hockey team. You go through, and again, I've always questioned the depth. Always said, hey, there's just not enough coming through the system. Players getting older. You got the whole RAS situation. What I also found interesting with the Bruins over the weekend, JR, the whole Chara thing, and this was Matt Cater hopping into the media, saw basically what happened with Brendan Gallagher. Then Don Sweeney kind of comes out and does the old, we're actually waiting to hear from you, kind of calls him out at that point, where Matt's trying to generate some interest, which I don't know there is for that. But, hey, the Boston Bruins, if they were really running this, which they don't, and Mr. Jacobs likes to make a whole lot of cash, they should probably go into a retooling right now. I just don't think the future is very bright for that team.
Pierre McGuire, of course, who lives in that area and does a ton of Bruins games, made the point that at least down in the Boston area, they're talking about the fact that the Bruins are looking to not necessarily, I don't want to misquote Pierre, but it sounded like it's like we don't want to spend any more money than we need to. So it sounds like all things being equal, if Chara gets an offer somewhere else that's a little too much, they're willing to walk out the door.
Yeah, and it was surprised on Zboril. They gave him a one-way contract. It's almost like, hey, if I give you a one-way, does that make you an NHL player? How deep have they gone in the playoffs on defensemen? And we've never even heard a whisper of this guy who was a first-round pick. So, yeah, and what it also points to me is that Mr. Jacobs, who is one of the wealthiest men in the National Hockey League, you know, before the whole salary cap era, was notoriously cheap with the Boston Bruins, and I don't know if it's a downturn in the economics. He certainly owns the building there. The Celtics are a tenant for him. But kind of how deep will they go? And when you look at a year that starts with Marchand and Pasternak probably being injured, having to deal with Rask and just not having much depth, they could be a real with the moves that Montreal's made, with where Toronto is certainly at. Ottawa's improving a little bit. Could see a slide for the Bruins this year.
By the way, so Matty Grzelcyk re-signs with the Bruins, Tony D'Angelo with the Rangers, Andrew Mangiapane with Calgary. Those were the first three guys that were scheduled to have arbitration hearings, all for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So they're all off the board now, which leaves just two others scheduled for this week. Ilya Mikheyev of the Leafs and Connor Brown of the Sens has his hearing scheduled for Thursday. As we sit here right now, 3 days away, no indication of what, if anything, is going on regarding contract talks for an extension of Connor Brown. As we know, again, they've changed the rules in arbitration. If it actually gets to the hearing, then that's it. There can be no settlement between when the hearing is held and when the actual announcement of the determination is made. It's like you're stuck with whatever the arbitrator tells. Now, you can still walk away if it's over $4.5 million.
Yeah.
That being said, we'll have to wait and see. I think this shapes up as a very interesting week regarding the future of Connor Brown.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like they're going to end up getting him signed, but I have no indication, JR, and I'll say both sides of it. Pre-COVID, for where he fit in for the year he had, I kind of looked at this and I've been saying all along, I think this guy's a real key kind of going forward. But I also look at this and look at for, you know, a guy like Tyler Toffoli after signing that contract, 4 times $4.25 million. I mean, for Connor Brown, if you're the Sens, are you offering 4 times $4 million? What has been difficult for Ottawa, and I know that they've gotten Murray, although they paid a pretty good freight. They'd got White, they got Shabbat. You know, you end up getting Dadonov as far as a free agent. Their strength, unfortunately, has not been able to get deals done. And you go back historically from Carlson, Duchesne, to Stone, to DeZingle, to DeMello. Now you end up with Connor Brown. At some point, you should try to get some deals done. It doesn't feel like it's trending in that direction.
Well, I'll dispute that a little bit. I'll say recently, you're right. Deals haven't been getting done. Before that, the Sens always used to sign their guys. And maybe that was more of a Brian Murray thing. And maybe things have changed. Maybe Pierre Dorion draws a harder line. I do agree with you. You know, of late, we've seen more guys walk out the door than end up sticking around with extensions.
Yeah.
I could also make the argument that probably at the end of the day, those decisions to either trade off some of those players or let them walk ends up being the right decision for where Ottawa's at.
It does. And I don't know, again, going back to Carlson, I'm assuming that was just a game. I don't think the $88 million was ever on the table. Then the guy leaves, plays hurt for a year, still gets the contract. So to really interpret it, what I'm only looking at, and I'll say this in the case of DeMello walking out the door, for the contract he signed with Winnipeg, and whatever, again, another story of whether they want to negotiate, whether they want to stay, I look at that money and what you're going to have to do. And basically, hey, you bought in Gabranson at the same dollars. DeMello was a nice piece. And again, I don't want to overrate Connor Brown as well. I'm not talking 5 times $5 million, and if he leaves, it's all going to crumble. That's not the case. But it would look like a player that likes to be here. And now he's also got himself in a good situation as far as arbitration, then walking out as a free agent. But at times you got to get in and hammer out some deals.
Yeah. Now, so for Ottawa, the newcomers are Matt Murray, but the other newcomers that will join the team next year in terms of signed guys, not guys coming up from the minors or draft picks or whatever, are Josh Brown, the defenseman, Eric Gudbranson, the defenseman, and Austin Watson, who we had on the show last week at right wing. All of whom share the same characteristic. They like to play the game a little bit on the tough side. Pierre Dorion, the Sens general manager, was on The Fan in Toronto on Friday and was asked about bringing in all those tough players.
We know that big, tough people are character people for the most part. And that's what we've tried to do. We're going to have a lot of talent coming up over the next few years. So, you know, people might question Josh Brown. I can tell you one thing about Josh Brown. We think he's just scratching the surface. I think he's just played under 100 games. I think he's the right age that he's going to bring the character, the leadership, you know, how DJ wants to play in boxing out. Gabranson's a local guy. We've had our eye on him. You know, he might not be the most skilled, but try to get to the net. He'll cross-check you in places that you don't like to be cross-checked. And, you know, we wanted that element up front with Austin Watson. You know, he can skate, he can kill penalties, he blocks shots. But he'll stick up for his teammates. And, you know, when you bring in guys like Stutzla, whether in the next few years we bring in a guy like Norris, Batherson, you know, and Brady sticks his nose into everything. So we got to make sure we need a bit of backup.
All right. So there's Pierre Dorion on Toronto radio on Friday talking about the Sens signings so far, or trades, which have resulted in a lot of tougher players.
Yeah, and probably get a signed copy of Brian Burke's book for coming on the air as well, A Life in Hockey. Yeah, I like it, though. I honestly don't have a problem with it. You get into always the issue of, and certainly the toughness, and I like that. Again, for younger players, I know the league has changed a little bit, but it still helps. The end of the day, though, when you talk about honestly protecting your investment, who is that player? And AJ had brought up on Friday that Gabranson had played with Fowler last year in Anaheim, was an even player, averaged about 22 minutes. Is that something they're looking at? But you get into that, you know, trade-off of, in a perfect world, if he's able to do that, that's a great partner. The question is he good enough to play those types of minutes on a nightly basis?
Right.
So, yeah, a little bit of a balance there, but in the case of what he's saying, that, yeah, I don't have a problem with that, and I still think that's a nice thing to end up having.
Yeah, so that was an interesting comment. So was this one, and he was asked about kind of the influx of young talent coming in. He talked about Lassie Thompson coming over and likely to start the year in Belleville, and then made the point of specifically named three of the kids at North Dakota, but then got into two of the key players who were on last year's Belleville team that may be starting the season here in Ottawa.
I think Alex Formington and Drake Batherson are real close. I think we think that Drake doesn't have much left to prove in the American League, but he has to come to camp in great shape and motivated, and I think Alex Formington could surprise a lot of people once training camp starts.
Drake Batherson has to come to camp in great shape and motivated.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. The word is that Drake Batherson didn't necessarily come to camp last year.
No.
I don't want to say he was out of shape.
Yeah.
But he may not have, and I think we've all agreed that he looks bigger and he looks sluggish, right, to begin the year. And that's part of the reason he had a slow start, ended up going down to Belleville, of course, eventually made his way back up to Ottawa for some games. So I don't know to say whether it was out of shape or just not in the proper hockey shape in an effort to try to get bigger, maybe got too big, not quite sure.
Yeah.
But I know he does skate with Crosby and all those guys down in the Maritimes in the summer. And somebody had suggested to me that Brad Marchand actually went up to him at one point and said, you got to get yourself in better shape here, buddy.
Yeah.
If you want to skate with us, this is a privilege.
Yeah.
Get yourself in better shape.
Yeah, so. And good on him. Now, this is also, and again, a kid that comes from a hockey family. It doesn't matter. Hey, you're transitioning. It's habits. It's all part of the whole thing, JR. And you look at it and say, hey, he hasn't tossed anything away. It is a learning curve. And when I look at this, and this is where you can't get into any excuses, when you're a hockey player, and this is when I remember it happened, when he put on 15 pounds in an offseason, I've never seen that on a guy, unless there's just an incredible growth spurt. But your body, when training properly, people say at times for a younger player, maybe between 5 and 8 pounds, hey, you bulked up too much. So that tells me you're not doing all the right things cardio-wise, training-wise, and nutritionally. And you can't fool Chris Schwartz of the staff, right? Like, you can't go and say, oh, man, I didn't realize I wasn't supposed to do the bench press all summer and bulk up. Do you know what I mean? Like, hey, you know where you need to be at. Your testing is there. You can't fool anybody. So hopefully a bit of a wake-up call. He got sent down, played really well. And look at what we've gone through with Nick Paul. I mean, this is all part of the whole, you know, certain guys right off the hop figure it out. But I've got to think, now this will be a test during COVID. This will be really for some of these younger players to see how they come back. So, like what he mentioned there, were you surprised that he didn't mention Norris's name, or do you think Norris is an automatic to be on the team?
I guess a little bit. I don't think it's an automatic for Josh Norris, just like I don't think it's an automatic for Alex Formington as well. I think both of those guys at some point will be here. Will they be here at the start of the year? I don't know about that. Injuries are inevitable, right? So there will be opportunities there. But I think both of those guys, I want to say they're on the outside looking in. I think if they come in and wow everybody, then they're on the team. But I think this is Josh Norris and Alex Formington have been pros for 1 year.
Oh, for sure.
You know, it's not the end of the world.
No.
If they don't start the year in Ottawa, they play another half season down in Belleville, go down there, dominate just like they did last year.
Yeah.
And then maybe they're ready to become full-time NHLers.
Yeah, no, I agree. Now, I get kind of caught up in kind of the sexy and the new, and I think both these guys have a great future. Lock him in his top six forwards, still like Batherson. But what is a tendency, and maybe because it's European-based, but you start to forget the Balcers and the Abramovs, and Abramov playing in the good league in Finland so far is lighting it up.
Four goals in four games.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots, you know, and then, hey, Balcers is a nice player. Been pro for a few years now. So you're right. Should stack up for some healthy competition. And at some point, we'll end up seeing both. And I agree on the form and the component for kind of the way the coach wants to play. He's also one of those guys that I think you've talked about his hockey strength and ability to get in and check. The tougher the team you have, I think the better it'll be for him. He doesn't appear to be a guy that's going to be dropping the gloves all the time. But you can get out and just play your game and be a bit of a rat. Nothing wrong with that either.
Yeah. You brought up Balcers, who just signed another 1 year two-way contract over the weekend, and Abramov's playing over in Finland right now. Those two names to me are pretty interesting, because as you kind of project ahead to an Ottawa Senator team that all fans hope is going to get better every year and start to integrate some of these younger players every year. Is there a spot going to be a spot for these guys on the Ottawa Senators? Or given kind of where their skill set is at, is there going to be a point where you're just going to have to move on from them?
Yeah.
And you maybe, and it's not to say that they're not NHLers, but for the, where the Ottawa Senators are at and what you need to fill out a proper lineup from first line to fourth line.
Yeah.
Like, is Abramov going to be a third or a fourth line kind of skill slash grinder guy?
I
don't know if he is or he isn't.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going to have to, you know, you have to wonder whether those guys are going to be long-term Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, and I'll go a little ABC. You mix in Abramov with Balsters and even a guy like Schlappick, we don't even mention. Now, the swing to next year and how this will play out, though, is that if Tierney and Brown, of course, go to arbitration one-year deals, not that we'll cancel it, and I don't think it'll be extended, but it could be the end of the Artie party. That's a pretty big swing right there as far as three forward spots. So, hey, yeah, lots of question marks, and ideally, what you're always looking for is to try to get into a spot of balancing competition with development. But, and I don't even know for this year because they made a lot of moves, but I'll guarantee you after this year, there won't be any more of the bottom third in the standings being acceptable from ownership. There is also going to be the balance of, okay, we've talked about this long enough now. I better start seeing some winning hockey here, and at least a 500 hockey team.
But the other part for me as well, where I kind of wonder about the future of those types of guys, is that you just can't, if you're talking about the 12 skaters up front, you just can't have, you know, 12 guys that are all 25 and under.
No,
like, you
got to
have a mix of not only how they play, but also in terms of where they're at on the young player versus veteran. Because if you really, you know, if you look at any team that goes on a run in a playoff and maybe wins a championship one year, I mean, that is it's a nice mix of youth and veteran leadership and all that other stuff. You don't win by having all young guys. And Pierre Dorion's made that point a million times.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, again, I just wonder, and you don't have to make a decision in the here and now, but I just wonder whether, you know, a lot of these kind of, I don't know, B prospect is the right way to put it, but, you know, some of these guys that look like they could be NHLers, whether it's going to be with Ottawa or not.
Yeah, no, and in the 32-team league, I think Abramov and Balsters and probably Schlappick can play somewhere, right? We kind of saw this with Stefan Nason, a borderline player, and here we are, what, 6 years after that trade was made? He's bouncing around, hanging around, and actually playing in San Jose. So, no, hey, construction of your team. Watson comes in on a three-year deal. Now let's see what they end up doing with Brown and some other things. But, yeah, lots of moving parts, but certainly lots of good players coming through.
Scott has texted in at 12-1200. Good morning. How bad will the Zaitsev trade look if they don't re-sign Connor Brown?
Well, again, I've said that all the way, Scott. The whole premise of this, and Brown came in last year, is that you get this guy. That's why you took him. They gave up a third-round pick with Cody Ceci to take on a terrible contract from a rival team and didn't force him to pick up any dough. It doesn't make any sense at all. And this is, I get into, again, as you go forward, a little bit of the asset management. I mean, putting out a Dylan DeMello for a third-round pick, which is just okay, and the contract he signs with Winnipeg, I just look at that and can't for the life of me understand why he's not an Ottawa Senator.
Right. These are the things that keep talk radio alive and keep the fans engaged. So share your thoughts. Text us at 12-1200. You can tweet at us at TSN 1200. Again, Connor Brown's arbitration hearing is scheduled for Thursday. Does not preclude that not happening if they can come to a contract agreement with him ahead of that. But if it does get to Thursday and the hearing takes place, at that point, you are stuck. Unless he gets over $4.5 million, which I don't think that he probably will. Connor Brown, we're talking about.
I'd be a little shocked on that.
Yeah, then the Ottawa Senators will have to live with what. You can't walk away from his contract at that point.
And
then he gets a one-year deal, and then he's an unrestricted free agent. And he holds all the cards at that point.
Very much
as we saw with Mark Stone a couple of years ago. All right, 7:34, we'll take a break. Come back, we'll talk baseball. The L.A. Dodgers are going to the World Series after a big comeback series win over the Atlanta Braves. We'll set that up. We will hear from Pierre McGuire, of course, coming up after 8. And Duke Ellingson will talk NFL after 9 here on a Monday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. Pierre's workmate at NBC, Doc Emrick, is going to retire at the age of 74. He says, quote, "I hope I can handle retirement okay, especially since I've never done it before, but I've been extremely lucky for 50 years. NBC has been so good to me, especially since the pandemic, when I was allowed to work from home in a studio that NBC created. Now, into my golden years, it just seemed that the time was right." So Doc Emrick is stepping away from being the lead play-by-play voice of NBC Hockey.
Yeah, met him way back early 90s, was doing the away television for the Caps, JR, and just the nicest man on the planet, super kind. And if you worked under the Lou Lamoriello, we'll call it a regime, boy, you had to be disciplined, and you had to say everything positive about the New Jersey Devils. And for him and Chico Resch, broadcasting some terrible teams, but hey, I don't think there's a person on the planet that doesn't love this guy. I'm not going to say forced out, but I have to think the timing of John Forslund, to be honest with you, what has happened in Carolina. Assumption is Johnny's going to slide in there. Love to see my buddy Kenny Albert, although Kenny has all the other sports to do. But do you look at that timing part of it? Is probably Johnny going into that spot?
He would seem to be an obvious choice now that he's been pushed out in Carolina. Yeah. And he is kind of, I don't want to say he's the second guy. I guess Kenny Albert would be, but I think Kenny's your buddy. But yeah, it seems to me that he loves being having his finger in everything, right?
Like yeah.
And to do that, you can't be the number one voice of hockey if you're flying off to do football and all that other stuff.
No, and strangely, he's kept that Rangers radio job as old, like his dad did.
Well, that's how much he loves it, right? Yeah. Forslund would seem to be, if I had to guess. And interesting, when you think about that crew now that's kind of turned over a little bit, was not Eddie Olczyk in, at least interviewing for the Florida Panthers general manager's job?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
At that point, it would appear that, all things being equal, he'd love to get back into the game, not just be a broadcaster. Yeah. So maybe they're just going to turn over the entire crew.
Yeah, I think for most. Now, you had the situation with Jeremy Roenick. He has certainly had, I don't know, are we ever going to see Mike Milbury again? I know a lot of people would be disappointed in that. they need more beautiful people like Patrick Sharp. You got Jonesy.
Yeah.
Those years of New Jersey wouldn't have been a whole lot of fun. But like I said, he just was so classy the way he handled himself. And for a lot of people, I'm not saying not a fan. I really like him. But for a lot of people in the United States, this has been the voice of your hockey. And he's also he's done a ton for USA Hockey as well. Like from that standpoint, he has really been a big fan of hockey. And I think a big reason of increasing the popularity.
Yeah, he is certainly in the United States the soundtrack of hockey. Yeah, I really liked him because he was different. The way he did the games was different. The words he used to describe things was a little bit different. And I like that, not that I don't like the guys that are the tried and true guys, the guys that to do it. As I said, it's a very, very unique skill. It's very hard to do at a high level.
Yeah.
And I really liked his work. I will say, and I thought that during, and I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that I believe at the end, I think he was in the rink, right? Oh. But I think to start the playoffs, he was broadcasting from home. And it's not easy,
hard,
right?
Yeah.
You got a bunch of monitors.
But
I did think his game had slipped a little bit.
Yeah.
So I just wonder whether maybe he came to recognize that. Maybe there was discussion of...
Yeah.
As the saying goes, better 1 year too early than 1 year too late.
And you know what? He's a pro's pro, and he's one of those people that would be so proud of, making sure that he had the players right. Was one of those people that always wanted to make sure the names were said right. And also, to this, when you watch the games in the United States, JR, I watch the broadcast at times. You have to also understand who you're speaking to, right? The way that they're going to present hockey in the United States still has to be just a little bit more regular, like you said. Like, he has to be in layman's terms versus... if we get into some of the hockey terminology that we use up here, you would lose a lot of people in the United States that would have no idea what you're talking about. So he was almost perfect in teaching the fine sport of ice hockey.
There you go. All right. So we'll talk to Pierre McGuire about Doc Emrick announcing his retirement as the lead voice of hockey with NBC. All right. 7:48. Let's take you back to baseball last night. Game 7, Braves and Dodgers. And maybe you tucked in early because this game went on forever, so you weren't around. Bottom 7, game 7, game tied at 3.
Bellinger back in. Martin the 2-2. Swing and a drive. Deep right field. On its way. Bellinger watches it go. Out of here. Cody Bellinger absolutely crushed it to right. And here in the bottom of the 7th, the Dodgers 4 and the Braves 3.
And that was a no-doubter, and Cody Bellinger celebrates by doing the old Bash Brothers thing with the next Dodgers hitter, to which he apparently popped out his shoulder.
Not the first time it's happened, but I hit Kike a little too hard, my shoulder popped out, so I just had to run back to the training room, and they had to pop it back in real quick, but I felt good. I was good enough to play defense and the game, that's for sure.
I love guys that just say, I just had to go back there, I just popped my shoulder back in, then I was good to go.
Yeah, it is. And for any athlete, any sport, but in trying to throw a baseball, depending what arm trying to hit a baseball, yeah, you're into dislocation territory there and hard to imagine. Now, Hammer, these home runs that they're hitting now, I mean, is this a Bautista
effect?
Is this a Bautista effect too? Like, I mean, for all the flack that he
took. Are they admiring them?
Well, there were two of them in that game. Every time Altuve or any of these other, or sorry, the fellow for Atlanta, every time they hit one, they stand there. They flip the bat. I thought that was a pretty cool moment, actually. There was a decent enough crowd. It was just launched, and he knew it. He's just standing there admiring it and absolutely loving that monster to right field.
It will come back to him next season. He will get thrown at. It's just going to have – hitters are going to pose. They're going to posture, and they're going to strut. And pitchers are then going to throw some gas near their head. That's what's going to happen.
JR, does this go back? Like, would Reggie Jackson have been the first person to do this? Or is this something that way back? Like,
Stylin?
I don't think it would have been previous to the 80s, right? Like, when you talk about the national pastime, I can't imagine.
Well, you would have got
Ted,
thrown at.
Well, I can't imagine even Ted Williams. But I'm saying 50s, 60s, 70s, right? You wouldn't even think
to
ever
show up a
pitcher.
It's all about respect for the game
or
whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and
I love it. I just watching his moment, how cool of a feeling that must be. You just rocked that thing there, right?
There's plenty of times, too, that pitchers get a big strikeout with, you know, two runners on or the bases juiced and they're pumping their fists and they're yelling and screaming. Dennis Eckersley.
Yeah.
Prime example.
Yeah.
Last night there was a few others.
Well, did you not notice there are a couple of times when the Atlanta pitcher struck out a Dodger in a key spot early in the game.
Yeah.
And the catcher kind of did the old fist pump right behind
him. Right behind the hitter.
Thinking, you don't often see that. I like it as well. I'm kind of in the middle on the bat flip.
I don't
mind the admiring. Hey, listen, if you hit it a long way, you know it's out.
Yeah.
Fine, admire that. Kind of throwing the bat. You know, it's. I'm kind of on the fence. I guess it depends on the height of the bat flip.
Yeah.
It's not like they do it over in the Korean League, though.
Yeah. No, that's an art form in the KBO.
The best ones, though, are when the guys stand there and the odd time it hits off the wall. That's my favorite, actually. I love that.
We just had one earlier in the Braves Dodgers
series. Did it? Yeah.
When the Braves were down 12-0.
Yeah.
I can't remember who the Braves hitter was. It just rocked one, admired it, and then it went foul.
Yeah, and the other part of last night's game and watching Mookie Betts make that grab, there are some guys that make them look like they're always going over the wall, like Pilar, and they aren't actually.
Oh, man, that was beautiful.
How effortless he is, even when you watch him play for the Red Sox. Like,
amazing.
He makes stuff happen athletically that you're just like, wow, that is special to watch.
Yeah, he is a terrific defender. I did see a highlight, speaking of the Korean Baseball League on the weekend. You see this one where deep drive to center field, the center fielder goes back, reaches over the fence and grabs it, but then doesn't react like he's got the ball.
Okay.
Lets the guy run entire way around the bases. He's high-fiving guys.
No way.
He gets all the way to the on-deck circle. Guy pulls it out of his glove and throws it back to the infield.
Oh,
and,
beautiful.
And he looks around and it's like, what?
Nice.
Yeah, that was awesome. All right. The Dodgers win 4-3. They beat the Braves, come back from 3-1 down in the series in seven. So now it's the Rays and the Dodgers in the World Series. We got the team with the biggest payroll in baseball against one of the teams with the lowest payroll, but they are the two teams with the best records in the American and National Leagues, respectively. So should be a great series. Everything is going about how these two teams kind of juxtapose each other, complete opposites. The Dodgers are all about hitting, you know, bombs. I think they had 16 home runs in the National League Championship Series. The Rays are, well, they hit a lot of home runs, but they're all about defense and, you know, pitching changes and all that other stuff. So I think it's going to be a really interesting World Series. Just hopeful that maybe we don't have 3.5 and 4 hour games.
Yeah, got to admit, over the weekend as well, a little disappointed that the Astros didn't win. I thought that would have been pretty cool for a team that
you
didn't think exactly that you thought, well, you know what, you can't get it done without cheating. This would have been a little bit like Deflategate to me, where, hey, you know, Patriots can prove that they can play with full balls. And you look at the Astros and coming all the way back the way they did. I thought that was just a little bit deep down. I know everyone hates him, and I'm not just trying. I'm having a little fun with it. But, hey, this idea that during the season Altuve's terrible, I end up having a hell of a playoff.
He did, but I'm glad they lost. I'm not with Simmer. I am glad. I'm sorry that it actually maybe that hurts them even more.
Oh, I think
so
it does.
It makes me feel better.
Yeah.
If they had got blown out in four straight, then it's like, well, you kind of knew it was coming.
No, you want a slow death.
Yeah,
right?
Yes, exactly. Which it was in a Game 7 4-2 win by Tampa. Okay, now speaking of, the L.A. Dodgers and big home runs and sorry Expo fans, today is October the 19th. Man. 39 years ago today.
No way.
It's a Monday. It's a blue Monday.
Here's the 3-1 pitch, and it swung on, fly ball, center field. Dawson going back onto the warning track. Dawson at the wall. That ball is a home run. That ball is out of here, and a home run for Rick Monday, and the Dodger bench clears to congratulate Rick Monday, who has hit a two-out home run here in the ninth inning.
There you go. The go-ahead home run from Rick Monday off Steve Rogers. What came to be known as Blue Monday gave the Dodgers a 2-1 win, a 3-2 National League Championship pennant-winning series victory. Dodgers went on to the World Series, and of course, that's as close as the Expos ever got. Came to an end today on, of all days, Blue Monday.
Yeah, and memories of that, JR, I was a 13-year-old doing grade four for the third time. So one of the bigger kids in the class. No, I was at Henry Monroe Middle School. This is how different it was, Jen. They brought in, it was an afternoon game, I believe. We actually were watching that live on TV in school like that. I remember that we rushed home, and sure enough, they lost. And then there I am going to my Gloucester Ranger practice out at Leitrim Marina. And the fella calls in, and I want a dedication. Can you play Tell Me Why I Don't Like Mondays? And
by the Boomtown Rats?
Yeah, no, that
had it already been out at that point?
Oh, well, I'm
was it just come out?
It had to have, but I just remember in the car, Tell Me Why I Don't Like Mondays, and that song came on, and it was Blue Monday, it was Rick Monday, and for Expos fans, and I was on that bandwagon, there were just so many other years, JR, before that, where they go into a final series against the Phillies or the Pirates and had to win two or three and never could get it done. And then finally, it felt like this might be, and of all things, they bring frickin' Steve Rogers out from the bullpen, didn't like that movie.
Yeah, and they're at home, and yeah, Steve Rogers, I believe, I don't think it ever pitched out of the bullpen or hadn't that year, certainly not in that playoff, but it was a bold move.
And they got somebody on base at the bottom of the inning, did they not?
I don't remember that.
I just remember that energy, and deep down you're like, oh, there's no way they're going to score. I mean, you knew it, but somebody, I believe somebody was on base, because it really was, and there was a young, fairly young, and that was Dave Van Horn and Duke Schneider doing the games back then.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was 39 years ago today, anniversary, a bad anniversary of sorts for Expos fans.
Yeah,
but here we are on a Monday. It is the anniversary of Blue Monday. All right, 7:56. We'll take a break. The latest news from 580 CFRA is on the way. We'll run down the whole scoreboard for you, including all the details on NFL Sunday as the Titans and the Steelers join the Seahawks at 5-0. The Bucs throttle the Packers. The Patriots are below 500 for the first time in 18 years this, quote, late into the season. Five games in, the Patriots are 2-3. So we're going to talk more NFL with Duke Ellingson as well coming up after 9. But when we return, after all of that, Pierre McGuire will join us. We'll talk about the retirement announcement this morning of Doc Emmerich, all the hockey news from the weekend, Joe Thornton, Cody Ceci, what's going on with the Sens. So we have lots to get to. We're glad you're with us here on a Monday morning on Sports Radio, TSN 1200.